The next case is 472-481, Howard Johnson versus Greene County Drug Task Force. Mr. Bellotto. I'm sorry, Ms. Bellotto. I read that as Lynn.
Pardon me?
Ms. Bellotto.
Yes.
I said Mr. by mistake.
Before I begin, I have a co-counsel here with me, and I wanted to advise the court that we will be sharing time.
Okay, you'll need to watch your time, leave some time for him.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May it please this honorable court, my name is Lynette Sidoni Bellotto, and I represent the appellant along with co-counsel Gavin Turner and other co-counsel who are present here today. We are urging this court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision denying our client a final appealable order for review of a motion to dismiss based upon immunity under 2744. The specific provision is at issue in this appeal, as was discussed earlier here today in another case, 2744-02C. This provision is constitutional and should be reviewed as effective by the court because it was brought to light in House Bill 215 by the General Assembly. Procedurally, the trial court refused to dismiss our case when we filed dismissal, claiming that we had immunity on a RICO claim that was brought by the plaintiff. We took that case immediately to the Court of Appeals under 2744-02C and other appealable issues. I will be addressing the 2744-02C as in 215, and co-counsel will be addressing the first proposition in our brief, dealing with the special proceeding issues. House Bill 350, which initially enacted that provision, 2744-02C, came about in January 27, 1997. 215 enacted that provision on June 30, 1997. Following that, this court decided that 350 was unconstitutional in toto in its Shewer decision. There are credible arguments, and we are not here to argue otherwise, that 215 enactment of 2744-02C is an enactment and is a reenactment. The statute of whether or not it is a continuation of the statute is unclear. But the court need not reach that determination because the Ohio Constitution in and of itself mandates that when 215 was enacted, when 215 came about and the General Assembly included the 02C language, as a matter of law, the language in 350 was redacted. It was repealed. So whether or not we have a continuation or a reenactment never becomes an issue here because
that's
the Constitution settles that.
That's why I'm interested in two things. If it's now an act, that's one of your arguments. We apply that to everything the General Assembly passes that under their rules and interpretation and the way the Constitution reads, there's a lowercase language that's not being touched by the legislation that's been passed. Have issues of retroactivity with respect to all of those matters which were undisturbed but now enacted under your view. So you go to apply them to treat the situation that is. Do you have a retroactivity issue? Under your interpretation, because your interpretation doesn't just apply to this little paragraph, you might say. This is the way all the legislation is passed.
To answer your question directly, then I will explain, no, we do not have a problem with retroactivity. In this particular case, we do not, because 350 happened in 1997, 215 happened in 1997, suit was filed in December of 1998, appeal was taken in the summer of 1999.
Well, I'm not worried about your case. I don't think this is here because we're worried about your case. We are worried about your case. We have to do all the cases because it applies to. So whether it's this issue or any other issue relating to any statute, if you follow your path of it's an enactment, then don't you have to deal with the issue of retroactivity as to all matters that occur before the latest enactment?
That issue of retroactivity, Your Honor, would be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. First, the court would have to look at whether or not the individual statute dealt with a substantive provision or a procedural provision to determine when it should take effect. Criminal law would add something new to that.
Isn't that just an absolute thicket? If we're following your analysis there. And then, let me take you to the second question. If you're right, what would prevent the General Assembly, who doesn't really like to have enactments if they're declared unconstitutional, to, as a matter of caution, once a year, just reenact the whole revised code? That'd be greatest defense ever to what a court might do in terms of unconstitutionality of a particular act.
The legislature has, in effect, precluded itself from being able to do that, and it does that through the revised code 1.54. The legislature is unable to reenact the statute by making no changes whatsoever. For example, if this were.
But, all the ones they care about find a little nick to give it here or there. A minor change.
In this instance, to have a substantive change, a reference to another statute giving an employee another additional benefit of immunity. In other instances, in which an employee of a subdivision may not be sued. To directly answer your question, the legislature, through the revised code, is not able to reenact all the statutes year in and year out by just saying, we repeal it and we reenact it.
I understand that. But here, the change in this bill wasn't what you call a huge change.
It's a substantive change.
It's a substantive change, but it's not a great consequence.
I don't believe the consequence of it is relevant. All whether right. It's substantive or not is the question to be answered.
Right. My question is, if you see cases bubbling up in which the constitutionality of particular enactments that the General Assembly cares passionately about, so they knew they were on constitutional thin ice when they enacted it in the first place, as you have with 350, LSC gave them, a number of warnings with respect to some of those. Why not just take the ones they care passionately about and find some reason to make some minor changes each year and keep them very inactive?
I have two answers to your question. First, the Shewhart complaint in this court filed with the original action was not filed until after the legislature took action through House Bill 215. Secondly, the court would, in essence, violate the separation of powers doctrine if the legislature were not able to go back and correct defects in enacting otherwise constitutional legislation. What this court deemed was wrong with House Bill 350 and Shewhart was it violated the one subject rule. that's a procedural issue of how the House bill came together. The 02C provision speaks to is whether or not we have a final billable order for a political subdivision as employees if they're denied immunity. That has never been ruled upon, it's never been challenged, it's not challenged on constitutional grounds. In this case, there's nothing to suggest that it in itself is unconstitutional. And the legislature must be given some process in which to take the court's advice when they make a mistake in enacting a bill, as the court deemed they did with House Bill 350, to correct that error. But that didn't even occur in this case, because the Shewer decision came out after 215. The original mandamus complaint filed in Shewer before this court was filed after 215 was enacted.
Ms. Bellotto, I understand your argument about 350 and 215. And the other one you haven't had much time to make, the special proceeding and the substantial right. And I understand all that. I have an uneasy feeling that this really wasn't a ruling on sovereign immunity. There was a motion to dismiss, and the motion to dismiss in and of itself does not permit really the... You're suffering the pangs of an undelivered speech?
Well, please be seated. Well, she has to watch her time for you, so...
I just wondered if this is really a sovereign immunity ruling by the trial court on a motion to dismiss. And I was thinking it through, had I been handling it, in your stead, that maybe I'd have filed a motion in limine where you could develop some of these issues. I don't know that this trial court denied you a sovereign immunity defense because it could not tell from the limited information it had before him on the motion to dismiss whether or not there was a defense. Is that a legitimate concern?
With all due respect, we disagree with that position. The trial court did deny us immunity because the trial court misapplied the motion to dismiss standard. Not saying you have what you need to do, what the trial court properly needed to do was to review the complaint, review the allegations, and make a determination. Does 2744 bar an individual's right to sue a municipality when making these claims, when making this claim under RICO? And that decision was not properly issued based upon the standard in the O'Brien case to review 12b6.
Thank you.
Just generally, Your Honor, I would like to address before my co-counsel takes over to address the special proceedings issue, that there are numerous reasons supporting why 2744 should be allowed to survive. It is no different than what how the 11th Amendment takes effect by this way or by prohibiting individuals to sue a state. It's no different than the outlay in the federal court system to protect the fiscal resources of the municipality, to protect the municipality who is not to be sued from having to go through a trial, to in fact protect the plaintiff who should not have to expend resources if they file suit against the municipality in error. Your Honor, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Bellotto. Mr. Turner.
Please, the court, Jeff Turner, on behalf of the President, I would want to address your question, Your Honor, at that time, Myra. And yes, in fact, we do believe immunity was denied in this case. Our argument is that, in part, was that the only way the defendants stayed in this case, barring the immunity statute, was the RICO claim, because this wasn't that RICO case. We argued that a RICO claim was not sufficiently pled, so what the common police court judge did was find that the RICO claim was sufficiently pled, which we believe was an error, and therefore found that another section of the revised code, the only exception of 2744, kept everyone in the case. That's why we believe the immunity was denied. And the other issue that we have against is...
Can you do that on 12b-6?
Yes, I believe you can.
Construing everything in favor of the non-moving party.
Construing everything in favor of the non-moving party, we believe that the face of the complaint did not adequately plead any exception to immunity. The exception to immunity was attempted to be pled with RICO, and that was not sufficiently pled, was our position. The court did not agree with that, and we believe that in effect overruled our immunity. The other issue, of course, I'll quickly discuss with the mandatory rebuttal, is 2505.02, which is, of course, our first propositional law. We believe the appeals court had jurisdiction in this case under whether it was 215, actually didn't act 27.402C as we argued, or whether you look at 250502, and actually it's mentioned by the dissent in the Court of Appeals decision that this was in fact a substantial right effect in any special proceeding. We believe that the facts of this case would warrant jurisdiction to the Court of Appeals under that statute as well, and we were denied our appeal.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Schell.
I'm just addressing 250502, which is what Mr. Before you start.
Counsel, are you challenging that the right to an immediate appeal on an immediate issue is unconstitutional?
I haven't written anything.
And nobody else, that I'm aware of, is playing Barnes & Noble either. It's all over timing.
I'm sorry?
It's all over timing. What applies because of the timing of 350 and 215?
Yes.
If we find that 215 did not adequately reenact 315, the legislature can then go ahead and, for a third time, pass the immunity statute and allow the immediate appeal.
Yes, ma'am.
So we would go through all this rigmarole to have that happen a third time, and then apply the same case of
okay.
Why wouldn't you want the issue resolved and off the books and done with? And you may win on that issue.
Well, as I wrote in my appeal, frankly, I know my limitations, Your Honor. After sitting here all morning, I see that this is a contentious aspect of the law, and I'm not a constitutional scholar, obviously. As I wrote in my brief, I thought it would be best decided on you folks. That's, well, I mean, no matter what you decide, Howard Johnson will still go back and decide to. It is constitutional, and they go to the Court of Appeals, and we'll go to the Court of Appeals, and we'll decide 12B6 voting. I don't know when on that, and we go back to it.
Would you say your client is telling that issue is done?
I can't hear you.
Would you say your client is telling money has got that issue resolved now? If he wins on that, he's done. It increases your chances of settlement. If he loses on it, you don't have to spend his time and money and your time and money on something.
Adversary, the latter of two of the lawyers arguing, said that the special proceeding issue and substantial right is discussed in the dissent. I think I understood him to say that.
Yes.
Is it in the dissent? Did anybody consider the special proceeding issue that I
don't recall that happening.
Okay. I didn't know whether I was missing it or not. Was it argued at all, 250502, special proceeding, substantial right, before now? Okay.
But under 250502, I don't believe that they should have an immediate appeal. First of all, their claim is that their substantial right is affected is this immunity under the immunity from municipalities found under 2744. However, you look upon this court's decision, he says, Judge Gross says, in light of the fact that the claims of political immunity are affirmative defenses and are fact sensitive in nature, the court believes such questions are too preliminary in nature to be decided on a motion to dismiss, the facts are not being fully developed and introduced as evidence in court. In other words, the court really didn't make a decision regarding what they're considering their substantial right to this immunity issue. In regard to the special proceeding, there's basically a two-branch approach to that, which is coming in by this court in 2502. And for this issue here is whether or not under RICO this is a special proceeding. However, you'll notice in my complaint, I actually plead RICO and other causes of action, such as violations of Mr. Johnson's rights under the 4th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Those were enacted in 1791, which is prior to the case. And the proceeding itself is just simply like any other proceeding. You have a complaint, you have discovery, you have a jury trial, you have a few other that.
This is just a civil suit for damages.
That's right.
And that's existed at common law forever.
Well, I understand that RICO is not existed at common law, but there are other issues other than RICO, and RICO is really a framework that you use to bring up these other issues.
Right.
And therefore, it's not a special proceeding, and it should not receive any kind of immediate appeal of the court proceeding.
And the other issue did, I'm trying to think, it's with all this reading, you can see that we do with just sitting here this morning. At some place I had the impression that it was not a denial of an immunity issue. Do you make that distinction?
Yes, sir. That's what I was saying, that the court says that in light of the fact that this immunity issue.
The court, now we're talking about the trial court. Okay, that's fine, because I need to review that. And maybe that's where I read it, but didn't the trial, somebody thought that the denial of the motion was not strictly on sovereign immunity. And you're saying that's what the trial court says.
Well, the denial of the motion was not strictly on sovereign immunity.
Yeah.
There were other issues. They had an issue regarding whether or not they could form the mens rea to
does the trial court's ruling on that motion deny them at any time the defense of sovereign immunity?
No, not.
They can still raise it.
Sure.
That's what I thought.
Thank you, Mr. Schell. Ms. Bellotto, you saved about a minute of your time. Or Mr. Turner, whichever one of you is going to take rebuttal.
Was not argued brief because there was an opportunity to several days before the oral argument to take place. We were contacted by the court's administrator, court appeals administrator, who told us that the case would be dismissed on jurisdictional basis based on Berger. Then what I mentioned was in the dissent, in that decision that was ultimately rendered, that's when Judge Grady mentioned that he would accept jurisdiction of the case based on 250502. With respect to the trial court's decision as to a denial of our immunity, it does in fact mention specifically 273402, but again, maybe the judge finds that 02G5 does not apply here because he believes they have pled an adequate RICO. We do believe this case is.
Of course, when he references 250502, he could be referencing the part that says that it determines the action and prevents a judgment in your favor on that issue.
Could be. He essentially mentions that he would accept jurisdiction.
There's a whole lot in 250502, though, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.
Thank you.